told me that they were going to fly me down to Atlanta to Marvel's studios, and we were going to do a scene with Robert Downey Jr. And I went and did this scene with Robert Downey Jr. on a set that they built, and the directors were there, and a whole crew was there. I mean, I'd never done a screen test like that before, where there was a whole, I mean, like, it was massive. And then and Robert came up to me, came up to me and just gave me this little pep talk at the beginning, and was just like, just have fun, there's nothing, you know, you've proved yourself, you're here because you deserve to be, just have a great time, forget about all this thing, you know, just let's have a conversation.
Hello, this is your host Graham Rooney, and welcome to A Performer, A Pint and A Pod, the podcast where I take you down the pub and we meet a performer, have a drink and find out the tiddly truth you only get in a pub. I'll be chatting to fantastic performers at all different points of their careers, discussing where they've come from, career-defining moments, and of course, guilty pleasures. All whilst having a laugh and getting a wee bit pissed. Fancy a pint with a pop star? A whiskey with your West End idol? Or a mojito with a magician? Then join me down the pub. So, without further ado, let's head down to the local and see which one of the nation's top performers is in there tonight. Pint, please, mate. Thank you very much. This week, I go for a pint with top actor Charlie Rowe. Barely in his mid-20s, and he's already had a superb career. Starring in hit film Rocketman, period drama Vanity Fair, CBS series Salvation, as well as playing leads on Broadway and the West End. I mean, seriously, all of that and not a wrinkle in sight. Oh boy. Anyway, let's get the pints in. Charlie Rowe, hello and welcome to A Performer, A Pint and A Pod. How are you doing, mate?
I'm doing good, mate. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm not too bad at all. What are you drinking?
I am drinking a cup of tea, a sort of nicely dark cup of tea, English breakfast, with some oat milk in it, actually.
How wonderfully British of you.
Yes, that's me.
I'm sure like everyone listening to this in the States will just be like, how stereotypical is Charlie Rowe?
Yeah, I'm glad that I'm appealing to that kind of audience. That's good. I like
well,
to
that's it. Yeah, you got to live up to it. And it's nice and healthy. Well done you. I'm
Thank
on
you.
San Miguel.
Yeah,
that's a bit, you know, no messing. Keep it in there.
Listen, if my local was open at this time, I would be having a Paulana. That's what I've been drinking a lot at the minute. That's been nice.
Oh, is that blonde beer, the sort of tall glass?
It's not too... Well, they don't serve it in a tall glass at my local, but maybe they do at the brewery itself.
Yeah. Just traditional pint glasses at your local. That's
exactly.
It, nothing
yeah,
else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you order a cup of tea, it comes in a pint glass. It's quite... yeah, it's just a nice little German lager. It's quite good.
There we go, lager of choice for Charlie Rowe. If you see him in a pub, you either want to get him a pint of tea or a pint of Paulana. There we go. That's the two. Either way, he'll be happy, okay?
I'll be ecstatic.
There you go. After this podcast, mate, you're just going to have them raining down on you.
Mate, I'll just be happy for someone to join me at the pub.
Of course, social distancing, wear a mask when delivering the pint of said drink, okay?
Please.
All right, well, I tell you what, mate, you are a very young man. I know, like, you know, we know each other, obviously, from playing football.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't fully know your career. I've now had a little bit of research, because I'm good like that. And, I mean, Jesus, you've done quite a bit, son, haven't you?
I'm 24, yeah.
24? Fair play, that is what you have racked up a CV. tell you what, we'll go right back then to how it all began. How did you even get into acting? Because it's such a young age and some very big things.
Mm-hmm.
How did it all kick off for you?
It kicked off for me. My mum was a drama teacher at school. And my dad was acting in commercials and doing voiceovers and stuff like that. And they went on holiday to Spain for a week, and they put me and my sister in a performing arts, you know, like I sing, I dance, I act, one of those like sort of holiday camp kind of things, I guess.
All right. For a moment there, I thought they had gone on holiday and just left you in some performing arts school.
No, you're right. That is what they did. That is what they did. That is what they did. They went on holiday. Me and my sister went to this course where we were like, you know, learning, I guess, all day. And then we were staying at a friend's house in the evening. And we did that for a week. And it was literally my first time doing it. And I got... I think we were doing Bugsy Malone, and I played Bugsy. At the end of the week, you put on a show, and then
straight into the lead role.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. high expectations from the age of 8.
The boy had a gift.
And then there was a bunch of kids, sort of agencies that came and saw the show, and I got snapped up at the age of, I think, 8 or 9 maybe.
So you've got all these people going to drama schools, desperately doing showcases at like between 20, 30, some people, you know, heading up into the 40s, and you're getting snapped up at 9 from your first show.
At 9. I mean,
that is young. That's like footballers these days.
I mean, possibly too young. Possibly too young. There are a lot of complications that come with that, but it was pretty amazing. And so I was immediately going up for like commercials. I did a Persil commercial and a Burger King commercial, I remember. Also, I did the one that my dad was most excited about. I did a Sabutio commercial.
A classic.
Classic, man. I think, I don't know if Sabutio is still sort of making ads anymore. I don't know if it's still a popular game, but like... I think
FIFA or is probably right. Taken over, right. You know, on consoles.
I think if you showed a child now like finger flick football, which is, you know, what Sabutio is, I think they would be very, very confused.
It's wonderful back then, but it's truly awful now. I don't think it matches up to FIFA, really.
No, it's from the middle ages, really, isn't it? But that was great, and I did that, and my dad was so excited because they gave me a free Sabutio like box with the pitch in, and I had a couple teams in it, so he was very excited about that.
And he just took that straight off you. That was his.
Yeah. He does actually. My dad actually has Sabutio competitions at the house every year. With his old like football team and his boys, and they come round, and everyone's got like a different. I think everyone has got like a different country, and there's like 4 tables set up in the house, and they like sing Nash. It's very sort of lad/nerdy. It's quite funny.
I was about to say nerdy lads.
Yeah, nerdy lads singing national anthems before a game of Sabutio. It's a laugh. It's fun. So I was doing commercials, man. I did a lot of them. Was doing like billboard photos and stuff like that, and
so that was kind of like the foundation. You started off basically in commercials, but then you did you quite swiftly moved into some bigger things at a very young age, didn't you?
I did, yeah, I did. I think the first thing was this was Jack and Nori. They brought back Jack and Nori, and I was like the main kid in one of these episodes. And it was all green screen. It was all like animation. And so I was just, but there was a puppy in it that was real. So it was like me and this puppy, and then a bunch of people dressed in green and just me shooting in a studio full of green, like talking to broom handles and tennis balls and things like that. And I think so I went from commercials to then like acting with nothing but green.
With tennis balls.
And then I did that, and then did The Snowman at the Peacock Theatre.
And like, I mean, you're still what, Ten at that point. And you've already been doing theatre at 10. You've done commercials.
Yeah.
But then you had some big movies early on, didn't you? Because you had The Golden Compass.
I was 11 then. That was the sort of, it feels so strange saying it because it's so young, but that was the transition into film and television.
At 11, the transition. That's amazing.
I did that. I mean, it was like a long audition process. It was great. I had the most amazing time. I must have done like 6 auditions over like the span of like 6 to 7 months. And it was great because I was just getting taken in and out of school to go and do these things and do chemistry reads with other kids. And then shot at Shepperton Studios for 4 months. And did like location stuff in London and Oxford and did like a bunch of night shoots in Oxford. It's odd because I don't really remember it. I remember anecdotes that I've told and I remember vague things, but it just seems like so long ago now.
I remember it when it came out. It was a huge film. Huge film with like, you know, Daniel Craig and like Nicole Kidman and everything. I mean, to be in something like that when you're 11, when you're making that transition into film at that age, I mean, that is phenomenal.
Yeah. It was huge. I don't really remember being aware of the scale of it. I just remember being excited by Daniel Craig. Like Daniel Craig was like the most excited. I remember having my makeup done and he was in the chair next to me. And this was just after Casino Royale or just before Casino Royale was coming out. So there was huge excitement about, well, at least from my end of like, so I'm sat next to James Bond getting my makeup done. And he was amazingly delightful and so lovely. And Nicole Kidman was not as kind to me, but also, you know, I was an 11-year-old kid. So, what, you know.
Come on. What did Nicole do to you? Did she just give you the cold shoulder?
Very cold, man. Very, very cold.
Nicole.
Nicole, they call her. They call her Nicole, or they do now. I was just excited to meet her.
And she wasn't excited to meet you.
I know, man.
She hadn't heard about your Bugsy.
No, she hadn't. She hadn't. You know, that's, yeah.
I can't believe that.
I just went and said hi to her and she just like completely,
She blanked you back.
She ghosted me, man. She ghosted me. I've been messaging her on Instagram ever since and nothing.
She's like, oh no, that's the kid with the Sabutio dad. No, I am not talking to him. I'm not getting involved with national anthems with plastic toys. Not a chance.
Oh, dear.
So that obviously was like, that was a massive, big experience right early on. Not getting frozen out by Nicole Kidman. The Golden Compass, the film itself. So what sort of followed on from that? Because it feels like looking at your career, it was everything was just gradually building that little bit more as you were getting older, really. So what followed up from the Golden Compass?
Well, I did. So after the Golden Compass, I had a really great experience on that. They wrote some more scenes for me, which was hugely exciting. It was my character kept getting like added to little bits. And I think I became aware of that as an 11-year-old and was quite gassed by that, I think you could say. So much so that I feel like I told my agent that at the age of 11 that like I sort of only want to be going up for like main roles or something stupid like that.
But that's, as a kid, you don't, you wouldn't fully understand what you're kind of saying as well. You're just like, well, that makes sense. They're writing me more parts. So, I mean, clearly they made a mistake when they cast me. They should have given me a bigger role. Hello, agent. From now on, it makes sense because otherwise they're just having to write me in.
Right.
So let's just start from the beginning and just put it straight in with all the lines.
Exactly, exactly. So I went, so my decision was then to go and do a terrible movie called The Nutcracker 3D, which was unbelievably atrocious. We won a, I don't think the film was released for like 3 years because it was such a mess, but it had an amazing cast. It was like me and Elle Fanning. Elle Fanning must have been 9 years old. I was 11. John Turturro was in it. Nathan Lane was in it. Francis de la Tour was in it. Richard E. Grant was in it. It was like, the cast was amazing. But the film was just a complete shambles. And we shot out in, we were in Budapest for like six months. And I did that, and the film didn't come out for like 3 years. And then when it did come out, we got nominated for a Razzie for the, in fact, I think we won the Razzie for worst use of 3D. so it wasn't a good, it wasn't a good movie.
It wasn't since your bold last statement of, right, come on, lead characters, here we go.
Yeah, and then I'm just in like a nutcracker suit with, I had curlers in my hair every day to like, because I don't naturally have curly hair. They wanted me to have curly hair. So I had curlers in every morning. I was in like a proper regal nutcracker suit. it was hilarious though. I mean, it was a massive movie, but it just didn't do well.
There's some huge names in that.
Oh,
and you
crazy.
Said, you were in, was it Budapest for what, 5 months? Did you say?
Five, 6 months, yeah. And me and Elle were doing like, because we had to do this sort of waltz at the end, obviously to Tchaikovsky's music and on ice. So, like, me and Elle were having this sort of quite rigorous, like, ice skating training and dance training. And it was great, man. It was wild. It was very, very strange.
I mean, I bet it would be an amazing experience. Because you said, were you 13?
12, 13, yeah.
12, 13. So, like, were your parents over with you at that time? Or?
There were a few people that came out. I had, because my parents were obviously trying to balance work and stuff at the same time. So my dad would come out for, like, a few weeks. My mum rarely came out because she was working. And then I'd have maybe a chaperone take care of me for a couple of weeks. My granddad came out at one time. It was mainly my dad. My dad sort of chaperoned me throughout my childhood, really.
With his Sabutio kit. with him, just to keep him entertained while you were on set.
His portable Sabutio kit. His pocket-sized Sabutio kit.
Yeah, he's got different sizes depending on location.
Yeah, it's strange being away from school for such a long time. Is really
well. Yeah, I was about to say that. How does it all work with the education and that? Are you just an idiot now who's acting career?
That's what I think of myself. Yes, but no. I mean, in a way it was great because I had to do school for, I think it was 3 hours a day. I think that was it. Maybe it was four, on set, one-on-one. So I did like 3 hours of intense studying every day. And then I could only shoot for, I think between six, I think it was like 6 hours, maybe 8 hours a day. It was quite intense in terms of school. Like, you know, I got throughout my entire life, I was doing exams by myself in like a trailer in Ireland or, you know, in Hungary. And it was okay. I was sort of nailing the exams slightly. I didn't really have the distractions of class or school or anything like that. It was just,
shooting a film.
Shooting a film.
You had your curlers in while you're doing your math. Oh, that's ridiculous. That's amazing. But this is the strange thing. I think a lot of people don't, a lot of people listening won't know this, that kids are limited on their time on set. Because I did a CBBC thing, and I did, the kids all did their lines and everything, so the camera's on them and I'm doing my lines, but it's all recorded in their bit. Then they finish their section, camera flips around, so it's on me for my bit now, and they all pissed off.
Yeah.
So all these kids just went, that I was interacting with three different ones, and I had like a runner, like the second AD, it's just all like sitting and kneeling down in front of me, and I'm like, Are you joking? This is, I've got to act with this.
Kids got to study, man. The kids have got to study.
They were studying. They were away having fish and chips at the side because they were just like, they're limited. Those ones weren't studying. They were just like, yeah, that's our time for today. We're all done now.
Yeah, legally, so it's a whole thing, man. Legally, it's a really quite intense thing. Like chaperones are very tight with it. Like if you're shooting with a chaperone, they sort of legally they have to be very strict with it. But when you get your parent, when your parents are with you, the crew and the director sort of know that they can sort of get through to your parents. Like they come up to my parents, they'd be like, you know, maybe we could keep, how's Charlie doing with his studying? Is he okay? Maybe we keep him for another half hour today, if that's possible. And my dad would just be like, yeah, I mean, sure. I'm sure he'd love that, you know.
So you can sort of balance it out and work it out a wee bit. Yeah, exactly. But like you say, a chaperone, it's not.
Oh, no, it doesn't. I mean, no way.
They're doing a job, yeah.
No way. But being a kid on set was fun, man. I mean, I did two projects after the Nutcracker as I was sort of getting older, this movie called Never Let Me Go, and then a sort of mini series for Sky called Neverland about Peter Pan. And on both of those, there was an immense amount of kids involved, really. So, I mean, we had a whole school in Never Let Me Go. So there were like hundreds of extras that I'd see every day. And then I was shooting with a bunch of young actors around my age, like 13, 14. And, we just had the most fun. I mean, it's a strange kind of school, but that is what it is to you. It is your playground, really. You would finish shooting and then you go and kick a ball around and outside the studio against the wall.
That just sounds like you're very lonely. When you said kick a ball around, I thought with other people, and then you went against the wall. Like, oh, Charlie.
No. You
just gained about 10,000 fans with that one.
Against the wall. That's funny. There were a lot of us. It was great. It was hugely entertaining. I'm really trying to defend myself now.
It was a specific game that we all kicked the ball against the wall. But no, Charlie, we all know now. We've got the image in our head of just you by yourself kicking a ball against the wall.
It wasn't a ball, it was a rock.
Yeah. You put some tape around to give the impression of a ball.
It was my favourite pebble.
The hard life. I said that this was going to be lighthearted, but look, we've gone so deep now.
Oh, man.
So in Neverland, I'm guessing in Neverland you were Peter. Were you Peter?
I was, yeah, man, I was.
Of course you were. You'd said to your agent, it was like, I'm sorry. If it's Neverland, there's only one Peter Pan and he's here.
Yeah, man. It was crazy.
Like looking at it now as well, that Keira Knightley and Anna Friel in it.
Anna Friel and Reese Iffens.
What a lineup.
Bob Hoskins came back to play Smee. It was wild. We shot in Italy for a couple of weeks. Me, Reese and Anna, and I got to do my scenes with Bob, and then the rest was done in Dublin, and we shot for, it must have been 5 months, it must have been about 15. And it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. So much fun. I mean, I was flying every day. I seem to have done like a bunch of flying When I did The Snowman, I was on wires on stage every night. And then when I did Neverland, I was on wires like all the time, flying about like Peter Pan.
So it's a specialist skill that you're just selling on my podcast here. Hey, guys, if you need someone to fly.
If you need someone to fly, I'm great on wires, man. I'm really good on wires.
Well, like, funnily, a little tangent on that about the whole flying sort of thing. Am I right? You were extremely close to being Spider-Man.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is unbelievable. I mean, randomly, I've ten-pin bowled with one of the other Spider-Men, Andrew Garfield, which I'll let you know. He's never going to challenge this, but I did beat him.
I believe you.
I soundly beat Andrew Garfield at ten-pin bowling. All right, there we go. But enough about me and my skills.
Well, that whole thing was crazy, and it was the craziest time of my life. And I did, obviously I was so insanely excited to even audition for it for the first time, and it went well. And then I got,
break us down to what your agent just like gave you a call and sort of went, we've got you an audition to be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And where were you? Where did you fly out to, or what was the deal for the first edition?
So the whole, I got a self tape first from my English agent. So I did that from my parents' house in North London, and then I was actually working in the States in LA, and I didn't hear about Spider-Man for a long time, and then I got called in to go for an audition. So I went into an office in LA and did my audition, and it went really, really well. I don't know, it was one of those auditions where I just had a really good feeling from the minute I walked in the door. It was just going well. Even like the chit chat with the casting director at the beginning was like, I wasn't making a fool of myself. It was like the conversation was flowing as well as it can when you're, you know.
No, but like 18. There is, like, I know exactly what you mean, that not about Spider-Man, but I would be in a very strange Spider-Man, me. God, some bald Scottish Spider-Man. But like, you know, but when you're in one of those auditions and like straight away you get on so well, the banter's great, and you feel just really relaxed then when you go to do the audition.
Yeah, 100%. It's not that it's a rare feeling, but it is one that you sort of, that you cherish, and I guess it is a rare feeling. It is hard to find in an audition room when you're sort of in that flow, and when everyone's in that flow state and everything's working out. And I did that audition, went well, got told a couple of weeks later that they want me to sign a screen test contract, and there's six of us, it's down to six of us. And you know, so did the whole contract thing, and they told me that they were going to fly me down to Atlanta to Marvel's studios, and we were going to do a scene with Robert Downey Jr. And
the wee boy with curlers in his hair in Budapest has come a long way at this point. He's like, whoa.
It was crazy. So I went down, I had some friends from London that had just come to LA to come and hang out with me and see me. And I just immediately left to go to Atlanta for 3 days. So they were a little bit pissed off about that. But I mean,
you've got a decent excuse.
That's true. I mean, no, and they were happy for me. They were, they were excited.
And they're like, what? Robert Downey Jr., Spider-Man, piss off. Don't think you're much of a mate, Charlie.
But it was crazy, man, because there were three Londoners like going up for this job, and there were three Americans as well. But you know, like it was me, Asa, and Tom, and we've known each other since we were kids. Literally going up for auditions, seeing each other every single week at auditions from the age of 10. So it was it felt like a really safe place. And really quite heartwarming, and we were just extremely excited to be there, and we were all inspired by each other.
That's amazing. So basically, one of the mates was going to be Spider-Man. Basically,
one of the mates was going to be Spider-Man, we went in the next day. I was called first. I was the first one up, and I went and did this scene with Robert Downey Jr. on a set that they built, and the directors were there, and a whole crew was there. I mean, I'd never done a screen test like that before, where there was a whole. I mean, like there was a dolly grip. There were, you know, the DOP was there, directors were there. I think there was an A camera and a B camera. Like it was massive, and then Robert came up to me. Can I call Robert Downey Jr. came up to me and came up to me and just gave me this little pep talk at the beginning and was just like, just have fun. There's nothing, you know, you've proved yourself. You're here because you deserve to be. Just have a great time. Forget about all this thing. You know, just let's have a conversation. Let's just deep breaths and let's have a good time, man. And I had such fun. Like I honestly, it was one of the best auditions I've ever had. It just felt so smooth and natural, and he was great, and he was doing his thing, and I was just so excited to be witnessing his thing, you know, and his like particular rhythm, his unique rhythm. It was just so so exciting. And then I said good luck to the other boys and got driven to the airport and flew back to LA and saw my mates, and they were all so excited for me. And 2 days later, I got a call saying I was going down to the last two, and then it got crazier and crazier and crazier. And I went down to LA again. This time, I was told that I'd have a costume fitting in the suit.
A Spider-Man costume fitting
in the suit. It was it was insane, man. It was insane. I had a costume fitting. I had a stunt session because I was going to do a fight scene with Captain America, and then I can't remember what the other scene was, but I think it was like a monologue or it was very simple. I got called up first again. I'm in the suit. I have this fight scene with Chris Evans, and it goes great, and we have like a really fun time. And
I love it. I'm just fighting with Captain America.
Yeah,
in an addition,
it was unreal. It was, the whole thing was totally unreal. I was running off adrenaline. I then did this sort of monologue scene, and then it was like literally just all over like that. And the directors said, you know, there was a round of applause from all the crew, and they said, Charlie, thank you so much. You've done all you can do. We really like you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for coming down. You know, you've done all you can do, and forget about it. Don't worry about it. We'll be in touch. Thanks for coming down. And I'm like, okay, well, you know what? Like, cheers. Thanks for having me, guys. Can't believe that I'm here, you know, doing my whole sort of like child actor, like just smile and wave, and this is crazy. All of a sudden I just feel this like weight just lifted from me, and I just need to go and take a piss straight away. It just like all cut, like I don't know what it was, it just all rushed down. I think maybe it was the nerves that sort of finally hit or something, but I was just like, thank you so much for having me. I've loved every minute of this. And then I'm immediately find a runner and I'm like, I got to go to the bathroom. Can we go? And he actually pulled me aside. He was like, you should go and shake hands with every single producer and say, thank you. I'm like, oh my God, you're so right. You're so right. So I then go to like the 22 producers that are there, you know,
well, desperately needing a piss.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hopping from one foot to the other. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
I really liked his acting, but he's a bit weird when it comes to handshakes.
He's a bit hyper, isn't he? So gave them all hugs and high fives and handshakes and all that. And got back to my trailer, like I'm in the suit, man. And I just couldn't believe what was going on. I was just so excited. It was the most elated I've ever felt in my life. It was the most, I was just so excited and chuffed and went straight to the bathroom and start taking a piss. And I'm just like, I can't believe what's going on. This is crazy. I just feel this little fart coming, and I let this fart go, and it's just not. It was like, oh my God, that was not. It was not a fart. It was. It was as if I'd done a Jackson Pollock painting in my pants. It just sort of like it sprayed. It was a spray. It was like. And I'm still in the. I'm still in the suit. So I'm like, oh my god. And I'm like turning around, like checking whether I've left, whether it's gone through my pants to the, whether there's some sort of stain or, you know, and I'm just like peeling the suit off very delicately, like, please, no. I've just shat myself in the Spider-Man costume. And I'm like, you know, I sort of sniff the back of the costume and it's okay. It's fine. There's nothing on it, but my pants are full of.
yeah, that. No more description, please, on that bit.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was.
You followed through in the proper Marvel Spider-Man suit.
Yes. Yes, I did. And I'm convinced that that's the reason that I didn't get the part because they, you know, I mean. They walk into my trailer at the end of the day and the truckers are like, it smells a bit of shit in here. I think, oh yeah,
If that happened every scene, it could be quite a lot of Spider-Man suits we go through.
Oh yeah. So that was my, and then obviously it didn't go through and Tom got it. And, you know, it was gutting, but these things happen, you know?
I have to say that is the most unexpected ending to that story. I just did not.
The icing on the cake is that I was too afraid. You know, I had these shit filled pants, and I was too. Obviously, I couldn't leave them there because I didn't want someone to find like a shit in the trailer. So I wrapped them up in the bin plastic bag from the bin. I put them in my rucksack. I got driven straight to the airport. I flew back to Los Angeles with shit in my bag. Because I was too embarrassed. I was worried that if I ditched it in the airport, it might be considered a suspicious package or something like that. You know, like, I don't know what was going through my head. So I made it back to Los Angeles with, it was at that point I knew I didn't get the part when I like opened my rucksack, like that was crazy. I'm just, oh, fucking hell, what's that?
Oh my God. So you did this unbelievable addition. You'd gone to Marvel Studios, you'd met Robert Downey Jr., then you'd gone and had a massive fight with Captain America, and then you just shit yourself.
Shat myself.
Not yeah. only that, you like put it in your bag and fly back.
It. Yeah. Oh. Good times, man. Good times.
That was going so well. That was such an amazing story.
Yeah, I
mean, dear Lord, what an ending.
It was the craziest time in my life, like the most I think because you're sort of, because I've been acting for so long and from such a young age, you sort of gain this like reputation in your community of being sort of like the actor kid and like be and having these expectations put on you of like sort of where you're supposed to be and like and the journey which you're taking and and I think that was the closest that I had got to this idea of like I am fulfilling everything that these adults have been telling me my entire life of sort of the direction that I'm supposed to go in. You know, it was like the closest that it was intense. It was very, very intense.
Yeah, because, we just talked before that. You did Neverland and you played Peter Pan in it and it has people like Keira Knightley and Anna Friel and Bob Hoskins. And so there are like these massive expectations. And as crazy as the end of that story was, I mean, without realizing it, yes, you were really enjoying everything, but actually there was a massive amount of pressure within your body. and clearly, it just burst at the end there.
It all came out at once. Crazy.
But you know what? I mean, since then you've gone on. You're doing absolutely cracking stuff. Because when exactly was the Spider-Man? I mean, that must have been a few years ago now.
That was I mean, it was. I think it was five years ago now. I think just under 5 years ago. It was around the time it was at the end of sixth form, and I got this job shooting a TV show in Atlanta, an American TV show. It's sort of like my first like American thing. And I decided to drop out of sixth form 6 weeks before my exams because I just got an American TV show, and I considered, I was like, well, that's fine. I'm set now. I don't need to stay in school.
See you later, guys. I'm done.
Yeah, exactly. And that, now I can't read, but, so I went and did that in Atlanta, and we did that for 6 months. And that was sort of my college experience. I was living in an apartment building with the cast. It was amazing. That only lasted one season. We got cancelled, and I went to LA and I booked this crazy HBO show directed by David Fincher, which it didn't happen. It didn't happen. But we did 5 episodes, and then it sort of came crashing down, as many things in this industry do. That was the beginning, and then Spider-Man was happening sort of throughout that process. So it was like, I couldn't quite believe what was happening. I mean, I was working for HBO, I was working for David Fincher, I was living in LA, I was driving in LA at like the age of, you know, I couldn't drive in England. At the same time, I'm like down to the last two for Spider-Man. The whole thing was totally nuts, totally nuts.
Yeah, because was the TV the first TV thing that you were talking about? That was that the Red Band Society.
Yeah.
That was like, from what I had a little watch before, and I think it's described as a sort of comedy drama about teens in a cancer ward. Is that right?
Yeah. But I mean, basically the concept is like, let's have a high school movie set in a cancer ward, so these people actually live, you know, real lives, and they feel the same things that any adolescent does, and let's not make a really depressing show, because a lot of these people aren't completely depressed, you know, they're just, this is what they are dealing with. And that was the idea, and we made I'm really proud of the first episode. I think the first episode is really, really great. And then it was a great experience, but it just became slightly more diluted every time, and you know, it was more just about like the characters dating each other and eating ice cream rather than you know, rather than like the intense things that they're actually dealing with.
When I saw that as the breakdown and sort of a synopsis of the show, I was like, that to get that balance, because obviously you want to show that they view their lives the same in the sort of sense of like girlfriends, boyfriends, relationships and stuff like that, but still have the seriousness to it. So that's
I had the greatest time of my life there. I mean, I was working with Octavia Spencer, and she was totally incredible, and as I said, I was living with some of the cast pretty much, and I was the youngest. I mean, I was 18 years old, but I was living with, like, you know, 24 year olds, 27 year olds, 35 year old, and we just had the most amazing time. It was a very, I consider it a very unique halls experience at uni, you know, like that, you know, we were cooking together every night, going out for dinner.
It's very unique, I would say. I think you're right on that one, but I bet you it still does, of course, like you say, have that same feel as a halls of residence, because you're all about that same age and stuff.
It's great, man. I mean, I was playing a cancer patient, so they shaved my head every single day, like wet shaved my head every single day, which took its toll. I feel like my scalp is now like old and withered.
An old withered scalp.
Yeah. Everyone knows that about me, man. Everyone.
This is a well-known Charlie Rowe fact. I think you find it on IMDb, actually. In trivia, under Charlie Rowe, an old withered scalp at the age of 24. So what was next then? I know that you did a big thing called Salvation.
Mm.
Which I'm right, you were the lead in that.
That was a TV show for CBS in the States, which ran for 2 years. Sort of a sci-fi ish show about an asteroid coming to destroy Earth, and I'm this sort of young, youthful MIT geek who knows how to save the planet, basically. I mean, it was great fun. The cast were brilliant, and I was working.
And I suppose at this point, you're a British guy going across, doing an American accent, lead guy in a show. How was that? Did you feel any pressure at all or that? Because, the Red Band Society, that was a regular, but this one, you were much more the lead in, weren't you?
Yeah. It's weird. I didn't actually feel pressure. I just felt pure excitement and like wanted the show to be as good as possible. Quite quickly I realized that, this is quite lonely. I mean, I was in Toronto for the first year, and then we moved to Vancouver for the second year. And I'm just living there by myself for 6 months. And I'm the youngest in the cast by 8-9 years. I mean, I was like 21, and my fellow cast member Jacqueline Byers was, I think, 28 at the time. So like that, at that time in my life, that was quite a sort of age difference.
Definitely.
But yeah, man, it's very strange. It's like it, and because you're shooting 13 episodes at such a quick rate, you really get, there's a real routine to it. And because the scripts are coming in quite late, there's less time for like exploration or anything like that. So I was working all day. I was going home at night. I was learning my lines, making dinner, like watching a movie maybe, and then getting up the next day, like 7 days a week. Not 7 days a week, that's a lie. 5 days a week. But it was
straight up lie there. Like, saw through that straight away. 7 days a week, I tell you. That's the kind of actor I am. It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, like you say, you're 21 playing the lead role in this like huge American show. I mean, there was like, you know, a lot of big names in it, huge production values and everything. And I mean, that is quite a journey. Yeah. Like, I mean, to be 21 and just be and to be doing that,
it's really like genuinely quite tricky. Like, I don't know, I like living alone was just not something that I mean, I'm used to it now, but at the time, like 6 months alone was like quite the prospect of that was quite intimidating. Like, I think that's where the pressure lied, was like, oh god, how am I gonna stay in touch with my friends, how am I gonna stay in touch with my family? You know, that, like, I think that's really where, that's where the pressure lay for some reason.
Well, it's because, I mean, we've talked through you, like, there's so much stuff that you've done. But actually, the truth of the matter was, you're 21, so it's like someone going away to uni by themselves for the first time. Like, you know, you were actually at an age where it was like, this is still a very young age. You're still very much growing up. But you're all by yourself in a new country again, and so I mean, it's understandable that you.
It's understandable, but I think, but also because I've been doing it for so long, I think I just thought that I'd grown up somewhat. I think I just, because I had all this responsibility, I think I just thought that, like, oh, I'm a grown up, full on grown up. And now I've realised that that's not true. that I may never, I ever feel like a grown-up.
Yeah, I'm a child. but I suppose like, it's probably because in the sense of acting and experience, like we've said, you've been going since, like, you know, you were nine. So you, it was over, you, over a decade you've been doing what you would, so you would be thinking, oh, I'm quite grown up in this aspect of life. But in fact, you were but a child.
I was but a child. And it is that odd thing when, like, when you meet child actors and they are 9, 10 years old, and you're like, I'm having a full on grown up conversation with a 9 year old. And like that is what happens to you when you're a kid. Like, you get so used to spending time with people so much older than you that then you get to school and you're like, I don't know how to talk to these people my age. But like, I can have a full on conversation with Richard E. Grant, like, about living in London at the age of 11. Like, it's weird. It's really weird.
Right. Let's talk about your latest big film that I actually went to see recently, which was huge, obviously, and must have been some experience, was Rocket Man.
Yay.
How was that? What a massive part, and like playing a real life character who like changed music in many ways as well. Just tell us a bit about that.
Just the most amazing project, the most amazing cast. I've always been a fan of Dexter Fletcher, and a huge fan of Stephen Graham, and it just turned out that like most of my scenes were with him, and I couldn't quite believe where I was, and I was hugely intimidated by just the talent that was surrounding me the whole time. It was, you know, the prospect of playing someone that's real. And also what was interesting about that character was that he's real, but he's not famous, and
you wouldn't know him unless you were like a huge music fan, really into your music, and or really into Elton John as well. I mean, and really know your stuff,
right? And he is underappreciated, so that was really interesting, just that prospect of and I've met him since now a couple of times, and he was very happy with the movie and the way he was portrayed, and he's a very, very sweet guy. But yeah, man, that set was just incredible. Dexter has a way of working, of getting the crew into such a good mood, making everyone feel so welcome. It was a total joy to be on that set, man. I learned so much from Taron and Jamie and Stephen in particular,
You've got a lot of sort of like household names in the UK, you know. I mean, Jamie Bell, obviously, from Billy Elliot onwards, he's done so much. Stephen Graham, just anything he does, it's just rave reviews.
I know, yeah, he's got one of those like everything turns to gold kind of thing.
Yeah, and then of course, like Taron, it's an amazingly talented boy, and he was singing as well.
He was doing the whole thing, man. He was doing the whole thing. Like, I've never seen someone work so hard on a set. He was so incredibly focused. But also, you know, like, he made me feel so welcome, man. It was odd because my character was sort of in and out. Like, I was shooting. I think I shot on Taron's first day, which I think was in the first week of shooting. And then I was shooting on the last day of the project. So, I mean, I'm in maybe like a quarter of the movie, but my days were dotted around throughout the entire thing. So I felt, which was great, because I just felt like I was really part of the production. It's not like I, you know, popped in for like 3 days, 4 days and then ducked out. You know, I was there for the whole time. I really managed to like gain this relationship with the crew and with Dexter and with Taron and with Jamie, which was just so helpful. There was also something fascinating I found working with Jamie and Dexter, both guys who have been working since they were kids. So I really enjoyed being around them and just seeing, reminiscing on our on our childhood. On our acting childhoods.
Well, I mean, well, that's because it is a very different sort of specific type of career. I mean, like I've spoken to many different actors on this podcast, and not many have been child actors. Like, a lot of people, pretty conventional lives and stuff, and then they've decided to go to drama school.
Yeah, and that's
how it all began. And that's most people I know. The child actor route is very, very different, and it's a obviously, I mean, it's a real lifestyle, like you've said. I mean, you've been all around the world.
Yeah.
I mean, before you were even 21, you'd done like this decade of work everywhere. Like, you know,
yeah, I mean,
it is unbelievable.
It is wild.
But I do remember, I have to say, you were in one of my sort of favourite scenes of that Rocketman movie, when they, like, you know, Elton John broke in America.
Yeah.
In that club. Absolutely superb, and I loved that scene.
Yeah, when his legs are up, mate, so they had when the audience flew up in the air, they built this rig where they had like these long poles going across the floor of the Troubadour, which are attached to wires, where there were just like a bunch of grips ready to like pull the wires, and the poles would rise, and they had bike seats underneath every extra. So these extras were sat on bike seats that were attached to this pole, and then the grips like just pulled them up, and the extras flew into the air. It was the most surreal thing you've ever seen.
That is amazing.
It was genius.
Oh. Yeah, man. With your flying skills, you would have been teaching everyone before it began.
100%.
Could Charlie just please take the stage and take everyone through what they'll need to do?
it was brilliant, man, and just watching Stephen in particular was just heaven on earth. I did embarrass myself brilliantly in front of them. There was this one scene where I had to pop a bottle of champagne. It opened with me popping a bottle of champagne, and then it zoomed in on Stephen Graham smoking a cigar in just the coolest way possible. I'm not really a cigar fan, but just watching him do it, I was like, holy shit, how are you doing that? It's so professional. like he's not puking and retching, which is, but I had to pop this bottle of champagne, and I don't know why, Graham, but I could not pop this bottle of champagne for the fucking life of me, man. Like, we must have done 9-10 takes where I can't sit. It's simply me just like, I think I was so nervous, like my hands were sweating, so like my hands were just going around the bottle, and then
action.
Yeah, literally.
Let's go again, Charlie.
Charlie popped the champagne bottle, man. Guys, I'm really trying here. But I think it's in too tight, is it? You know, and then like...
It's all right, Charlie. It's only £1,000 every take. Yeah, and yeah.
And then they tried like removing the cork and then putting it back in so that I would sort of fake popping it. And even that I couldn't bloody fucking do. I mean, it was just like, you know, these small, intricate things that you have to do on set where just your whole body fails you for some reason. And you're like, I don't know why I can't do this simple task right now, but I can't do it. And my favorite actor is sat behind me waiting for his big moment on camera. And he's laughing at me. And which 23-year-old doesn't know how to pop a bottle of champagne? What am I doing wrong? It was crazy. And we got there eventually. And
you know, like, you know, you're trained in many skills of acting. Like, it's about acting. I mean, that's a real life conventional, like, you know, that's manual labor. That is, it's no wonder you couldn't do it.
I know, man. I've been on set since the age of 9.
Yes, and everyone's been opening bottles for you. You would struggle with a bottle of Iron Brew, let alone champagne.
Oh God, that's sad.
I can't believe that. I love the idea of that scene where everyone flying. That is amazing how they did
it. Good, man. It was so good. It was just an incredibly creative set, and I really got the impression that I was working on a movie that I would like, that I wanted to see. Like I was working on a movie that I wanted to see. It was just really the energy on set was beautiful. And obviously I'm a fan of Elton John, so like I was extremely gassed to be there. And Taron was so kind to me, man. He set me and my family up with tickets to go and see Elton John in Cardiff. So like we went down and like met him, and it was so mad. Mad.
Well, and I mean, like I say, when I saw that film, I thought it was amazing. There was like two films that came out within a year, and I absolutely loved both of them. Was Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocket Man. They were very different, though. I thought it was going to be quite similar, but there was actually quite a difference, because there was a lot more, which I suppose isn't that flamboyant. It was sort of like quite well flamboyant and dark as well.
Yeah.
Elton John's, which I suppose is representative of his life. But like the way that some of the dance sequences went like off into this different world, but then at the same time they had this counseling section and everything. So
yeah, I think I really, because obviously Dexter was involved in Bohemian Rhapsody as well. As in, I think he came in and like shot the last quarter of the movie or something like that. But I remember him saying that like he did that because he knew he was going to go on and do Rocket Man. And he could sort of make all the mistakes that he needed to make, you know, when he was finishing up on Bohemian Rhapsody, he could try all these things he was thinking of trying. Right. And I do.
He's just on Bohemian Rhapsody. No, guys, you've got the finished article. I'm ready to go. Hang on, Rocket Man.
But I do get the impression when I watch Rocket Man that there's just like, there's a risk to that movie. You know, I mean, it's obviously a studio movie, but there's, you know, like big dance sequences like that go off into these really strange tangents. It's a filmmaking risk, and I was so proud to be in a movie that did that.
Yeah, it definitely was pushing the boundaries more and sort of taking you more into this crazy world and this idea, rather than a completely logical just look at and storytelling of exactly what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
It was sort of like it took you away, especially on the songs. But yeah, I mean, honestly, that's off absolutely cracking movie.
Oh, thank you, man. Thanks so much.
Now, I've always got some questions I like to ask on the old Performer Pint pod.
Yes.
So we're going to ask some of these now. Now that we've gone through your career, I mean, we've still missed some things, but we've had to. I mean, we'd be here all day. And to be quite honest, I can't be arsed.
Fair enough.
I've had enough of you. No. Here we go. First up, mate, what would you say? What's your worst audition? Have you had an absolute stinker of an audition at all?
Well, I mean, I shat myself in one. So, like, that, in terms of stinking, that's probably one of them. There is one that comes to mind where I had to do a Liverpudlian accent. I do consider myself like decent accent, decent.
What would Stephen Graham say about your Liverpudlian accent?
He would be appalled. He would be appalled. So I had everything prepped. I was feeling pretty confident with the accent. I walk into the audition room and the casting director is from Glasgow. And man, I don't know what came out of my mouth, but it was not Liverpudlian. It was a strange, like, I was basically imitated her. And then she said, "You're doing my accent." And I was like, "I know. Can you give
me?" Who was it?
I can't remember her name. I'm sorry. She said, "You're copying my accent." I was like, "I know. I'm so sorry. I'm not meaning to, but this is just happening. This is what's happening right now." And then she said, "All right, have another go. Take a moment. Take a breath." I was like, "Okay, great. I will." And then I didn't copy her accent the next time, but it was not Liverpudlian. And it was like, it sounded like a sort of Portuguese man who'd been living in Wales for a few years. You know, it was really like, it was off. It was way off, man. It was terrible. And I said, "I've done it again. I'm so sorry. Can I have another go?" And she said, "No." and I saw
you're never going to get there.
Never going to get there. You're way off, man. So I saw myself out, and that was bad, man. Yeah, I felt that for a couple of days.
Oh, that is amazing. That is, honestly, it's always one of my favourite questions, because no matter how great a career has been, like, we've all had those moments where, you know, we've just had a stinker of an audition, where it just doesn't, it just goes all kind of tits up.
I mean, there's so many more as well. Like, there's just...
tell us another, if you've got another.
No, it's not at the top of my... I can't quite find it, but I know. There are so many more. I'm just letting you know, there are so many more.
I don't remember them, but I want you to know, like, that's not been the only one. Have you ever been on, because you've done a few, like, well, actually, we'll talk a wee bit about your theatre. You've done a few stage performances. You're not the youngest lead at the Old Vic.
Apparently, yeah. I did a play called The Winslow Boy in, I think that must have been in like 2012, 2013, at the Old Vic with Henry Goodman. And so I was 16 years old. So yeah, I mean, there was something about it being the youngest lead actor to have been on that stage or something like that, which...
I mean, 16, leading. Yeah. Leading cast at 16 at the Old Vic. Yeah. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Great, though. Like, I would love to do some more theatre. I had such a great time, and there was something so thrilling to be working, like, in London, because so much of the stuff that I've done has been, like, in Budapest or in, you know, America. Or so there was something really almost romantic about just about doing a play in London and getting the tube home. You know, I had a great time. Great time.
Now, you did Judas Kiss, didn't you?
Yeah, Judas Kiss. Yeah. I did Judas Kiss with Rupert Everett. It was already on at the Hampstead with a different cast, and then we did it in Toronto, and then we did it in on Broadway. So I did that for 3 months, and had to be naked on stage and had to kiss Rupert Everett every night, and it was one of the scariest things I've ever done.
I was wondering where you're going with that. It was one of the most amazing things.
And I've not turned back since. I'm naked right now.
Oh, man. But yeah, I did actually, like, I just saw, like, because I searched it, I was like, Judas Kiss with Judas Kiss, Charlie Rowe, let's have a little look. And like, the first, like, line was the Guardian. It was like, that was played by the often nude Charlie Rowe.
Did he say that?
Yes, but then it does say is undeniably attractive.
Oh shit! Okay, okay. Often nude. That's interesting. I don't know when else I've been nude in anything. But yeah.
Oh, no, I think it's completely referred to that show.
Oh,
that show.
My God.
Not you're often nude. You're often nude, Charlie Rowe, throughout his career.
That's funny. Love that. A deleted scene in Neverland, one of the Peter Pans. It's like, often told you, often nude.
No, a child performer, we don't really want to be often nude. That would really be troubling. Yeah.
That's funny.
But it was like a snippet. It's the top of a review. Have you ever had a stinker of a review?
I'm sure I have. I try not to read them. I don't read them. I can't remember one that was
good. Pause there, and I was like, "I'm just good."
You got to go for it. the good ones I get sent from my mum.
Of course, and cut out, laminated,
100%. And then the bad ones I don't read. I'm sure there are some.
You're going to say the bad ones you get sent by your dad? Like, come on, son, pull it out. Would you get sorted?
He's like, I told you should be getting into voiceovers. I'm sure there are some out there. I can't. None come to mind, unfortunately. That's a shitty answer. I'm so sorry.
Such a pathetic rubbish answer.
Yeah.
I'm not getting you back in this podcast. That's it. Done.
I'm so sorry. I mean, often nude could be considered somewhat, you know,
troubling.
Yeah.
Often I say, what's like your career defining moment? I mean, for you, obviously you've kind of gradually built, but was there, what was one of the shows, TV shows or the theatre that you did that you really felt kind of made think it was a bit of a gear change for you?
No, definitely. I'm just trying to think. I think no. there are some moments. I don't think it's one thing. I remember there have been some interesting moments that come back to me a lot. One being when I did this episode of Red Band Society, the first episode of Red Band Society. This American TV, my sort of first American TV show, I was completely bald for it, 17 years old. And the day that it was airing in the States, and just waking up that morning and knowing that people were going to see what we had been working on and what I had been doing, and just the mixture of elation and pure nerves and terror and dread, and then the just adrenaline rush of the whole thing. It's odd. It's that same feeling that you get when you're performing and you're just about to go on stage, you know, like that weird, like your heart's beating, you know, and then your heart's fucking going crazy and you're excited, but you're terrified and you can't remember any of your lines. Like that moment in particular was a real defining thing for me. I don't know why, but I remember, I think I actually puked that morning because
wrong with you when riddled. It comes to it? It doesn't matter. Like, when you get nerves, it's going to come out one end of the other, basically. That is what we've found out about Charlie Rowe in this podcast.
And then there was a time when I was doing the Judas Kiss, where I just became my character was quite a horrible character in it. And I said one of my lines and the whole audience went like, oh, and there was just a foot there. Just, you got that feeling again of you're like, oh my God, like that was, my whole body is tingling. It was just a reminder of why I feel at home on stage or something like that. I don't know.
And I think that's the thing. Stage. That's what's amazing about stage is you get that automatic reaction straight away when you've nailed something. Or like you know when the audience are just totally in it with you. It's one of the reasons why I love to do, especially comedy, because you just get that like roar of laughter straight away, and you know that they're with you, and that you nailed that last line.
Yeah. I think
that's
why that's when you know an audition's gone well as well. Like when people are in the room laughing, you're like, oh yeah, this is good. Like, they're with me right now. That feeling of knowing that people are with you, that you're all on the same journey here.
Oh no, definitely. I mean, when they've got story faces in an audition, that's never good.
And you're replicating their accent.
That's it. You now sound Portuguese. Shall I try again? No, please just leave.
Yeah,
you're wasting my time, Mr. Rowe. Thank you, and good night. See you later.
Yeah, God, I couldn't go back to that audition room for a while, actually. It was too dramatic.
Oh dear. Well, you know what? That is absolutely amazing. We have managed to get through so much of your career. Superb. All right, Charlie Rowe, that is Last Orders. Now, what that means is it's going to be some quick fire questions.
Okay.
You ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. No pauses. Like just gut reactions. That's what we want. All right. Have you got a hidden talent?
Yes. Oh, you want me to tell you what it is? Okay, I can.
No, I don't want a mystery for the listeners. Yes, I do, and it's still hidden.
Yeah. I can whistle through my teeth and whistle with every single finger. Is that a talent? I mean, it's more of a party trick, I guess.
No, that's done. No, mate, that's a hidden talent. Like, when you can't even open a champagne bottle. I can understand why you think that's a talent.
Yeah, it's good. I could name a finger and I can whistle with it. Like, it's a thing for some reason. I don't know why.
All right, okay. I tell you what, go for it. Index.
Oh, shit, which one's index again? Mate,
I can't see you. This is just audio.
Exactly. Okay, here we go.
Very good. Very good indeed. All right, fair play. All right, stop it.
Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry. It's quick fire questions. We've got to go and get our last pint, you know?
Okay, yeah,
last order.
Yeah, yeah. Go.
Okay. Guilty pleasure.
Very cheesy music. Very cheesy music from the 80s.
Oh, that's a fantastic guilty pleasure.
Like lots of Bee Gees stuff and like all that. Like, is that 80? I guess that's like late 70s. Like lots of that.
Yeah, I was about to say, I was like, they're more 70s, but it's okay, I'll let it go. Yeah. Do you have a pet hate?
I do. The white stuff that accumulates at the side of people's mouths when they're talking.
Yeah, that's a bit. It's a bit weird. Yeah, it's a bit weird.
I had a teacher who did it, and then there'd be like strings of it when he was talking, like between it. It really got to me.
You still have nightmares.
Yeah.
Do you have a bad habit?
I like to smoke a lot of cigarettes when I'm drinking.
Oh, you're not one of those. Are you one of those that like you go around the bar like asking people because you don't have your own?
You got missing a bunch of times. My thing is, I go in all very polite. I sort of like bring my shoulders up to my ears. And I go, I'm so sorry. Do you happen to have a Whistler by any chance? Thanks. Do you have a filter as well by any chance? Okay, thanks. And then I go to another table. I'm like, sorry, does anyone have any tobacco? And that's my bad habit.
Absolute nightmare.
Yeah, real.
Is that the guy just out of Rocket Man? That was a guy at Rocket Man begging for a cigarette. Tell you what, it must have been a tough year since then.
I'm down on my knees, man. Do you have a filter?
What is your go-to karaoke song?
The Sweet Escape by Gwen Stefani.
Oh, Gwen Stefani. What a choice. Very unexpected.
I've actually got another one as well, which is Foundations by Kate Nash.
Do you have a very high voice? You're singing ladies' songs.
It's incredibly high. However high you think it is, it's higher. I don't know why. Yeah, songs from my childhood, man, that I know the words to. Like that's it, really.
Who is your favourite actor?
James Gandolfini and Al Pacino.
Choose one.
Al Pacino.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Stephen Graham is not going to be happy.
No, he's not. He's up there, though. He's up there, for sure.
Well, clearly not. You never even thought about it. He wasn't even mentioned, you know?
I'm sorry.
Who's your favourite actress?
Natalie Portman.
Okay. Good choice. All right. Moving on. Your idol growing up.
Oh, my God. This is not... My idol growing up was, I think, if I can remember his name correctly, Phil Daniels from Quadrophenia. Do you know... Is that Phil Daniels?
I think it is.
He was in the park. He was in the Park Life video by Blur. That guy. Just because I remember watching Quadrophenia and being so excited by that movie that I was like, I want to be him. I had his poster on my wall.
It's quite a random choice for someone of your age.
Very, very random. Very random. I regret it already.
It's like, because Quadrophenia was out before I was born.
Yeah, I know. But it's one of those.
I say, I'm very old, but you know, I'm a few years older than you.
So, one that my dad showed me.
All right. If you weren't a performer, what would you be?
I think I'd be a therapist.
Really?
I think I would. I mean, yeah.
What's the foundations for this?
I like talking about feelings. And I feel like if I wasn't acting, I'd still want to be involved in talking about feelings. So potentially
still. Are you one of those guys at the pub after a few pints? You just get all, like, you know, emotional with your mates.
I don't get like gooey myself. Like, I'm not gonna cry and like tell you about things that have happened. But I do like, I'm like, so where'd you grow up, man? Like, what were your parents like? I am that person.
Yeah.
And do you have a film
with you?
you got any tobacco? How's your mum? Yeah, that's me.
Oh dear, a pub nightmare.
Hey, maybe we'll have a drink one time, man.
Yeah, I'm glad we did this remotely now. Here we go. You know what, Charlie Rowe, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on A Performer, A Pint and a Pod, mate.
Thank you so much for having me, Graham, man. Thank you. This has been so much fun.
So there we go. That was Charlie Rowe, an actor who starred in hit film Rocketman, acted with Robert Downey Jr., but sadly followed through in the actual Marvel Spider-Man costume. Fortunately, though, he starred in TV series Salvation and Vanity Fair since then, so the future is bright for the often nude Charlie Rowe. I'll be meeting fantastic performers in the pub over the next few weeks and months with career-defining moments and secrets from behind the scenes. So make sure and don't miss out by subscribing to A Performer, A Pint and a Pod and follow at Performer Pint on socials. I've been your host, Graham Rooney. Thank you for listening. Please do rate and review. I love to hear your thoughts, unless, of course, you don't like me. Then please do keep them to yourself. And remember, no one likes a stingy mate at the pub. So, share the pod with friends and family. See you next week.